Well, my colleague Chris Stain has been following the story of the Fort Hare duo, as we've been calling them, two lawyers who were brought into Fort Hare to investigate corruption and then found themselves being the people who were targeted because they didn't want to doctor the report. Well, I don't know. We'll talk about that in a moment. But they did not have the outcomes that were intended by those who brought them in the first place. We're going to find out from Bradley Conradi and Sarah Berger what the heck happened this morning. Dozens of police arriving at their homes and another twist in the saga.
Thanks, Alec, once again for the opportunity.
So let's just pick this up, Sarah, if we can start with you. You guys have been in East London in court. Just help us through why you were there in the first place.
Well, the prosecuting authority requested several postponements in our criminal matter, and this was one of five postponements, in fact, six for Bradley, because he was his bail was opposed initially. So this was our fifth appearance, and what we discovered now again is that the prosecuting authority is once again requesting another postponement in the matter. All of the accused, but we'll focus on ourselves, opposed the application and requested that in the interests of justice and trial fairness and our constitutional rights, that the matter be struck off the roll. Judgment has been reserved to Friday, so we now have to return again to the Eastern Cape for a sixth appearance to find out whether or not the matter is going to be struck off the roll. It was quite evident from proceedings yesterday and all the arguments that were provided by the various advocates and attorneys that despite the prosecuting authority saying that their investigation was completed on 12 September, that in fact the evidence showed that the matter was not completely investigated and that unreasonable delays were present in the matter, which is highly, highly prejudicial, in particular to ourselves as attorneys that are practicing and having to be dragged into a matter for 12 months. The main crux for the last postponement was that the prosecuting authority were looking for a racketeering certificate. We discovered that, and we appeared on 12 September, we discovered, according to the prosecuting authority, that they only submitted that request in January this year, and they're now seeking a three-week postponement. But in reality, what they don't say is that they stated in March 2024, after our arrests and 2 April appearance 2024, that they in fact had a racketeering certificate then. It's 12 months later and we haven't moved, and we are highly, highy prejudiced by this.
We're going to get into the reasons why in just a moment, but before we go there, because I think there are many people who've been following your story and they would have got what you said a moment ago. There are, however, many others who are kind of a bit confused about all this stuff that you're talking on the legalese. But what happened today, Bradley? What exactly occurred at your home today?
Well, what happened today is that a curator arrived at my house at 7 a.m. this morning to serve a court order on me, in which they restraining my assets, as well as all of the other accused in the case. I've got no issue with the curator. He did his job, very professional, very amicable. No problem at all. What I have a big problem with is it's public knowledge, particularly for people that watch Biz News, that we have called out the police for their behavior in this matter a year ago. They sent SWAT teams to my office, to Sarah's office, with their balaclavas and R5 rifles, put us on a jet, etc. We've reported them to the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Police, and they've acknowledged the receipt. The police are aware of this, those that are involved in this case. And what do we get this morning at 7 o'clock? Between, from what I'm told by my family, 16 and 20 police officers in 7 cars arrive at my house in front of my children to serve a court order that doesn't require any policing whatsoever. I raised the question, I think it was last week or the week before, you know, where are the police when serious crimes are taking place? They're nowhere to be found. But yet, once again, it was on the instruction of the police, whoever that is, and the people we are calling out includes the police commissioner, the head of crime intelligence, and the former police minister. So you cannot get a police officer, and I've seen this myself at police stations, to go and attend to a gender-based violence complaint. They don't have a van. They don't have staff. What is the problem? I've heard this when I've had to report when I still had bail conditions. And you send 20 police people, 7 vehicles there. That is followed by sending 15 people to my office, cops, that traumatized the entire building. The same thing that they did last year. People have gone home. So this is just heavy-handedness on the part of the state. They have never, ever, the police, questioned Sarah or I, not once prior to arresting us. And that was raised in court yesterday. The normal procedure is you investigate, you interview people that you suspect of having done something wrong, you form a view, you give that to the prosecution as the police. The prosecutor looks at it and decides whether it's something that is prosecutable or if more work is to be done. None of that happened. Never, ever in question. They simply threw us in jail, and they've got this ridiculous racketeer in charge, which means that it pulls us into a mess with largely people we have never met before. And we are now stuck in it. And now they've restrained our assets in the sense that we cannot sell anything, dissipate anything, manage our own financial affairs. We will oppose it in the strongest terms on the day that it's due or before that. But this is the response which we have received, and we believe it's a direct response to us calling out these powerful people just a week ago.
Anybody listening to this for the very first time will be saying, whoa, these guys have got to be hectic crooks, because there are 20 police arriving at the house to make sure that, I don't know, that you don't run, but you weren't even there in the first place. It reminds me a little, and I'm going to again get back into the beginning of the story in a moment, of what happened with Paul O'Sullivan and Sarah Jane Trent. When they arrested the two of them, they threw Sarah Jane into a cell where she said there were rats and all kinds of other crazy things around for the long weekend. They arrested her, put in, and it was just intimidation. There was no rhyme or reason for them doing it, excepting to say to her, you better back off, which of course O'Sullivan and her did not do. But in your case, are there parallels? In other words, where did this all begin? How did you get into this situation in the first place? Maybe Sarah, you can take us through it.
There is a beginning, and that beginning is when we were assisting the university with many investigations.
The university?
Of Fort Hare. And as a result of all of our investigations, we realized very early on that we weren't able to access people's bank records, etc. We assisted the University of Fort Hare in drafting papers to get the SIU, a proclamation to have the SIU come into the university and do the
SIU?
More special investigations units, to come and do the more sort of heavy-handed subpoenaing of bank records and things like that, which, you know, we can't do. As a result of those investigations, the SIU came in and we supported them. We provided them with many, many investigative packs and evidence, and we had several open workshops with the university and the Special Investigations Unit, including the Political Killings Task Team, who is now being disbanded. We assisted them with one of the murder accused on corruption allegations. We've been assisting the Hawks for 6 years, and we continue to support them. To give you an indication of how entrenched we were at the university, since we were released on bail in April 2024, we've conducted 2 investigations for the Special Investigations Unit for Fort Hare. We've conducted 1 full investigation for the Commercial Crimes Unit, NPA, in East London. And we've continued to support the Hawks and various other prosecutors at the Commercial Crimes Unit in East London. In fact, Horizon Forensics was subpoenaed to testify as a witness in a matter now on 2 April, which has just been postponed, for the University of Fort Hare. So that's how it all started. One day on 28 March 2024, 1 year ago, we were arrested on fraud and corruption allegations. And we sat back and we thought, but how could this ever be the case? Well, what people don't know, and it's always about timelines, is that in the year before, in the late 2023, Oscar Mabayane, the Premier of the Eastern Cape, was challenging the Special Investigation Unit's proclamation, presidential proclamation, in which he cited the president as a respondent, to overturn their investigations in its entirety at the university on the basis that there was a report that Horizon produced that shows that he allegedly tried to fraudulently obtain a master's and a PhD degree. Now, he succeeded on a technical point, not to overturn the entire Special Investigations Unit investigation, but the fact that it didn't specify master's and PhD degrees. The Special Investigations Unit then came to us and said, help us draft a portion of an extension to that proclamation, which Horizon Forensics did, and the team at BCHC. Now it has been put into play and the president has authorized it and he can be investigated for academic fraud, but nothing has happened to him. Now, in February 2024, a month before we were arrested, and this is a couple of months after the initial interim interdict that he got to stop the SIU from simply questioning him about it. If you've got nothing to hide, you would allow the questions. The prosecuting authority came to see Horizon Forensics at our offices in Cape Town with two captains of the Hawks, and they asked me to talk about Oscar Mabayane's matter, as well as his supervisor that had facilitated multiple politicians with the same modus operandi, selling shelf degrees to politicians. I said to the prosecuting authority and to the Hawks that I'm prepared to explain the fraud that went on between the professor as well as Mabayane, which were two separate criminal complaints which we had prepared, but that Horizon would not be prepared to testify on the matter given that it's politically charged. 1 month later, we were arrested.
Let's just recap a little bit here. Here you have the Premier of the Eastern Cape, ANC Premier, very powerful person within the political environment. He buys or pays somebody at the university to give him a doctorate and a master's degree, which he hasn't done any work for whatsoever. If this gets disclosed and becomes, I suppose, public knowledge, then the first thing I would ask is, well, who else has been getting this kind of degree? How many of the politicians who say they have masters or even bachelors or certainly doctorates earned them? Or were these just purchased by them? And we know there have been a lot of politicians, in fact, who are claiming to be academically qualified, who are nowhere near that. Is that, Bradley, what you guys have, the hornet's nest that you've stirred here? On the one hand, with Mabayane, one can understand I don't know what you can understand from him, because surely in this case, you know, his hands in the cookie jar. Oops, sorry, I shouldn't have done it. Apologize and leave politics. Clearly he's not doing that. But the fact that there's such a heavy-handed response to you would suggest to me that this goes very deep.
I think that is spot on. There are many other politicians that got their degrees from the University of Fort Hare on the same basis, that the professor concerned was running a business pretty much, selling degrees at all levels. But his main connection was to the politicians. And we know that about a year or two years ago, the former Minister Kiewit, who was also a premier in the Eastern Cape, was also exposed for only having a matric certificate, although she claimed an honours and a master's degree. So this thing runs deep. If my memory serves me correctly, about 33 people, independently of us, were deregistered by the university, linked to the professor concerned. That professor, we have laid a criminal complaint against, in addition to the fraudulent degree racket. He also stole more than 5 million rand from the university. That's just one of the allegations. He has never, ever been arrested for it. In the same way that over 20 other people that we laid criminal complaints against, with amounts ranging to up to 25 million rand, the same NPA office in East London that is hell-bent on prosecuting us, have only pursued one person, and that's the one that Seda referred to, where she's been asked along with Horizon to give evidence in. And the reason for that is because we recovered civilly 2 million rand from that individual. All of the other cases which are trial ready, some of them have 6,000-7,000 annexures which we have put together as part of our investigations as evidence we've consulted on. They've never ever been arrested or questioned as far as we know. Yet all of the effort has gone into this case that we were pulled into with, as I said earlier on, people that are largely strangers to us.
Okay, so let me just get this again, unpack it so that people who are seeing this for the first time can understand. Here we have a racket going on in the University of Fort Hare. You're an attorney, partner at BCHC Attorneys. Sarah is a director, also an attorney of forensics, Horizon Forensics. You go in there to investigate. Who asked you to come in the first place? Sarah?
The Vice Chancellor did. He came to Cape Town preceding my time. I've done an investigation. I've gone back and looked at the documents, and the request came from the executive office. He came and visited BCHC and Horizon. Again, it was pre my time with the previous director of Horizon Forensics and BCHC, several attorneys from BCHC, to discuss matters that were out of his control because of the syndicates that were operating within the university. And he asked that BCHC take care of disciplinary matters and Horizon come in and investigate some of the high-level matters. Those matters ultimately years later got taken over by myself because I had to read into those matters because that other director was gone and I became sort of, you know, the face of the business and was involved in all of those investigations and taking it forward with the Hawks and pension fund holds, et cetera, et cetera. So, but that never changed. That authority never changed because throughout the years, the instructions came from the executive office and they were fully apprised of the investigations that Horizon were doing. In fact, we were working around the clock nonstop. I had to be available pretty much on 24-hour call to fly up at any given point in the Eastern Cape to be available to collect evidence, download evidence, etc., and do investigations.
So why were you arrested? What happened there? What were the grounds for the arrest?
Well, they're broadly calling it fraud and corruption, but I still have absolutely no idea. I've received the docket. I have no idea why I'm there, aside from one invoice that I apparently drafted, which was for legitimate services. Indeed, Sarah drafted this invoice. I don't know why I'm there. And that is why I say it has to be political. It has to be to discredit cases against those two in particular, the supervisor and the premier of the Eastern Cape, the supervisor of the University of Fort Hare, because, yeah, this has just been a Stalingrad approach. They will not hear my representations. They're just ordinarily an accused has a right to submit representations as to why they should not be in a matter. Well, the prosecutor said he's not prepared to hear mine.
And Bradley, if I look at this as a taxpayer, I get pretty irritated because this is taxpayers' money that is being used against you. From your perspective, what about the Minister of Police, Mchunu? He is, by all accounts, a very good minister. Is he not aware of this? Has it just not gone onto his radar? Or is he also unable to address what appears to be just intimidation of you by some pretty powerful people who've really done a lot of wrong?
I believe that he is aware of our case. I've got great respect for him and I've got great trust in him. I don't have that same respect at all for his predecessor, who, by the way, was in court along with the Commissioner of Police, along with the Head of Crime Intelligence when we appeared after the Easter weekend. So I think the new Minister of Police is trying to fix things, but it's very, very difficult to fix it when people within your department are problematic. As far as taxpayers' money is concerned, you should be very concerned. If you send a Learjet to Cape Town to fly two people on an Easter Friday to East London, and that same jet got sent, I think, to Johannesburg and to Durban for certain selected people. All of that was in order to ensure that the appearance, well, firstly, that we were detained over an Easter weekend. And that can break you, particularly, it can break anyone having to be in jail. But you've got family, you've got children, they're looking forward to seeing you, and you don't come home from work. You know, I mean, that caused untold trauma to my family. But all of that was so that on the day, the minister and his cohorts could stand outside the court and parade us as criminals that have just been arrested, bearing in mind it was 3 months before the elections. So that I've estimated before that it must have cost in the region of 2 million rand, the operation, because I had 20 police officers from all over the country, of the best that you will ever see. You won't even see them in the movies equipped as these policemen were. And they did that throughout the country, whereas all that was required in these type of allegations, it happens every single day, and any lawyer, criminal lawyer, will tell you, the protocol is you call the people in, you talk to them. We see it with the parliamentarians all the time, or not too often, maybe. You go and hand yourself over at a police station. If they've reached that stage of the investigation, the bail is agreed, you walk across the road to the court and you go. Not in our case. This was a publicity stunt pre-elections and designed to punish. And I must mention, Alec, that I received a phone call 3 months before from people in law enforcement. And I was told, because they've worked with me so closely over the years, that they owe it to me to tell me that I'm being targeted politically. And I asked them, what does that mean? And they said, look, we are sticking our necks out. We don't know exactly what's going to happen to you. And I immediately contacted an attorney and said, should I be worrying about this? But to be honest, I brushed it off, but what could possibly happen? 3 months later, I realized that warning was true.
Where you stand right now, it appears as though you're on the back foot. However, and I have experience on this, and when the Guptas were in full cry, and I was in the UK and engaged with some interesting people over there, to say the least, when the international community picks up on stuff like this, things actually start happening. What the international community, or in particular the United States, is doing right now is it is putting together a list. We know it's well documented and well distributed of people against whom there will be financial sanctions in South Africa. Surely you guys would have some names that you could add to that list. Are you prepared to help international initiatives here? Because if you're just going to be taken to court and abused in this way at taxpayers' expense, then at some point in time, you've got to find a way of fighting back, Sarah.
You know, this is just such gross intimidation. And I think what they're trying to do now is just take away our capital power to continue the fight. And if we need to draw in and assist whatever group to bring this to book and bring it to light, then I'm very, very happy to name and work with the international community, because this syndicate that is operating in South Africa needs to come to an end. It needs to come to an end. I mean, this is, you want to tell somebody that says, I've got a big secret about somebody, you almost want to tell them, and please, whistleblower community, don't be angry with me. You almost want to tell them, don't do it. Your life, as you know it, will be destroyed. They will take away your assets. They will arrest you. They will shame you. There will be death threats on you. There are so many ways in which they will try and destroy you and your family emotionally and mentally, and do it slowly. Yeah, this needs to be exposed. And, you know, Bradley and myself are waist deep in this now. I'd be prepared to assist with a list of names.
And you certainly aren't backing down. But the problem right now is where you stand after this court order is that you can't even use your, if I'm correct, you can't even access your bank accounts. You can't even use your bank cards. Is that correct, Bradley?
That is correct. But we will challenge that in due course, but that is the status quo. But we are not on the back foot. We are on the front foot, and we will not stop. And I've made this message clear, and they know that. We will not stop. We do both have the advantage of being attorneys. And I have said before, I'm well known. I've been rated as one of the top lawyers by international bodies and my peers for over 20 years. I can stand up in the Constitutional Court as I've done before. So I have that advantage. I can practice law and I can do a very, very good job about it. And they will not stop us. The wheel will turn, but they are not going to get away with what they have done. They can think they're going to get away with it, but only for so long. We will hold them to account.
Bradley Conradi, partner at BCHC Attorneys, Sarah Berger, director of Horizon Forensics, and I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.